Welcome to TJ Frog's podcast, where I chat about my knitting, Dorset buttons, and creativity in general, as well as sharing my love of Scotland, especially the Highlands and Islands. Hello, I'm Tanya, aka TJ Frog, or sometimes called the Button Lady. And in my creative business, I predominantly make and promote the traditional craft of Dorset buttons, which dates back to the early 1600s, a cottage industry that employed many people in Dorset on the south coast of England. Brought up in Dorset, I now live on the Isle of Skye, and wherever you may be in the world, welcome and thank you for joining me for my 23rd episode, Derailed. Hi, I am back. The TJ Frog podcast is back. Derailed, yes. Me and the podcast parted company for a few months this year, and 2019 just has not worked out to be the year of the TJ Frog podcast. Sometimes some things have to give, and that's the thing that fell off the rails. As many of you will know, the first episode of 2019 didn't go out until March, after we had a disruptive and emotional end to 2018 and beginning of 2019. That episode was the pre-Edinburgh Yarn episode. And then there was a post-Edinburgh Yarn Festival one that followed up in April. The third episode of the year in May was later than intended, after I got germs and a cough that took weeks to shake off, and it certainly was not conducive to talking on the podcast. That episode back in May was the last one that I did this year, and it was called Getting Back on Track. Quite ironic, really, because I didn't stay on the track, so Derailed felt like the right title for this one. The emotional exhaustion from all the sadness that took place earlier in the year, and putting so much energy into Edinburgh Yarn Festival, followed by being ill, which took a whole lot longer to get over than I realised. Plus, there has also been the small thing of something called the perimenopause, or the menopause. And this has teased me for the past couple of years now, and this summer it decided to fully embrace me, and yeah, full on. And I've just been so tired and brain fog. Oh yeah, that's really seen me struggle to get my words out when I'm in conversation with people, just having total blanks and blanks about what I'm doing, and again, just not conducive to recording the podcast and thinking through what I was going to be doing. And in fact, if you saw me at Woolfest back in June, I apologise if I was talking nonsense to you or if I look phased out. I know some of you said that I looked a bit exhausted and I didn't really seem myself. I think I was exhausted, and to be honest, I very nearly pulled out of that show about 3 weeks beforehand. And if you were at the show, you will know what the heat wave was like. So that certainly didn't help how I was feeling at the time. Fortunately, all is well with me, other than what nature is doing to my body. And while I know you've not come to this podcast to hear about the menopause, in fact, I can't even believe that I'm telling you this or talking about it, because I'm a very private person. But of course, I know that therein also lies the problem about many things in life, because many of us don't talk about things that are impacting on us. Instead, we suffer in silence. Although having said that, I've seen quite a lot of talk starting to filter through recently on my social media feed about the menopause. Or when I started reflecting on it, is it just that I've noticed it more? I'm not quite sure. Maybe some of you will be able to relate to this. But yes, I've seen a lot more talk about the extent of the symptoms, not realising what the extent of those symptoms would be, and not realising how they would impact on our daily life. And as some of you will know, it is so much more than the hot flushes that we all associate with it. And they in themselves are bad enough. Yeah, there's a whole lot more going on. In hindsight, the three shows I did in 5 weeks and a local craft fair in the early part of the summer were probably too much off the back of what had happened from December to March. And they zapped me. And I did three more events in August too. It's been a strange few months, and that's why there hasn't been a podcast. I derailed a little bit there. Here I am in October though. I am feeling much more alert. I am not so tired, not so much brain fog going on, and I am certainly firing on more cylinders than I was in the summer. And it is time to revive the podcast, to get a schedule in place and get some momentum again. And I have some great interviews for you, and I'm really looking forward to bringing those to you. This episode then is to check in with you, really, to explain why I went off the tracks and say, yes, we're back, we're full steam ahead again, and to just really say hi. I'm still doing the TJ Frog podcast, and I want to say a big thank you to all of you who got in touch with me to say that you were missing it and when would it be starting again. That was really lovely for those messages. I'm not, for this episode, going to go through all the sections that I usually cover. The normal format will resume in the next episode, which will come out on Sunday, the 27th of October. I have just returned from two amazing weeks in Shetland for Wool Week, and this was followed by a quick day trip down to London for the Knitting and Stitching Show, which I hadn't been to for about 8 years. So it's great to see that again. I'm now back home, doing all the usual chores like washing and cleaning, and I'm restocking, getting ready to head over to Inverness for a few days for Loch Ness Knit Fest. Talking of which, I have a wonderful Across the Bridge interview for you in this episode with Aileen of Aileen Clark Crafts. And Aileen will be making her first appearance at Loch Ness Knit Fest this year. Aileen lives in Fife in Scotland on the East Coast, and I've spoken about Aileen before on the podcast, and I think I mentioned her in one of the EYF episodes that we had planned to do an interview at the beginning of the year, but life got in the way. Finally, back in August, I caught up with Aileen, and I am delighted to bring you this interview. Enjoy listening to our chat. Welcome to the TJ Frog podcast, Aileen.
Hi, Tanya. It's so nice to be here.
Oh, it's lovely to have you at last. We tried to do this a few times, haven't we? And one reason and another, it's not worked.
I know, it's great. We finally managed to get together.
Yes, at last, here we are. So Aileen, let's just cast our minds back to 2015, March, Edinburgh Corn Exchange, in the back room.
I know.
And you and I were both in the pop-up market.
Pop-up market at EYF.
That's where we first met, wasn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it was both of ours first yarn show.
Yes. Yep. Yes. I can remember I was just as you went in the door, I was on the right hand side and you were over on the
second on the left. Yeah. Gosh, that seems like such a long time ago now, but wasn't it just a great introduction to such an amazing world of fibre enthusiasm?
Yeah. I think I didn't actually fully realise what it was going to be like, how busy it was going to be, the range of makers there.
And I had no idea what to expect. I had been doing a little craft fair in Edinburgh the previous November, and it was Mika herself that came past my stall and had a look at all my needle felted sheep jewellery and bits and pieces, and she said, oh, I run Edinburgh Yarn Festival and I think our visitors would really like what you do, and would you be interested in taking a stand at our pop-up market? And I said, sure. And then when I got there and saw everything for sale and all the different booths, and everything seemed to be things for making things yourself, I'm thinking, what on earth are people going to want with my work? But oh my goodness.
You've not looked back.
They loved it, and it was such a lovely, lovely welcome and such a fantastic introduction to the whole yarn and fibre community. I was blown away by it. Yeah.
And since then, you've gone on to exhibit at other yarn festivals, haven't you?
Well, it was great because more kind of popped up in Scotland, so I didn't have to travel too far to try out different yarn shows. And then this year I had the privilege of exhibiting at Woolfest for the first time.
Yay!
And I absolutely loved that. It was like being at a convention of fibre enthusiasts and really, really special. I really felt at home within the company of so many like-minded people.
And this Woolfest has a focus on a lot of different ranges of fibre, crafts, styles of work, doesn't it? And quite a lot of people working in the felt makers artist industry.
Yeah, so. Compared to the other yarn shows I've been at, exhibiting at, it's been predominantly, you know, yarn producers and hand dyers, and I've been maybe one of two or three felt makers or people that are selling finished things, whereas Woolfest, there was a lot more felt makers and all making completely different things, and there was a lovely camaraderie among us. A lot of us had seen each other's work online but never met.
Right.
So we were meeting for the first time. A lot of us were new to each other's work and really excited about each other's work. And, you know, I always say this, you could give 10 felt makers the same materials and they would all go away and make completely different things.
Yes.
And it was just really interesting to see what people were making with such a variety of fibres and techniques.
So taking a step back then, how did you get involved in felt making?
It's funny because, I mean, I went to art college to do ceramics. That's what I was passionate about as a teenager. And I never, ever managed to get into doing it after I left college. And then working from home, I started to be interested in making cards, and everyone was into card making at some point, and it was never enough for me to just sort of like kind of rubber stamp something onto a card. I wanted to, the bit that makes it creative, I wanted to create that bit. So I started messing about with textiles and fabrics. And then one of the craft fairs that I did regularly at that time, there was a felt maker there and she was selling kits.
Right.
And just to make a piece of flat felt. And also my friend, my best friend from many years, had learned how to make felt from a traditional felt maker. And she had shown me the basics. So with what she had taught me and this kit, I made my first piece of flat felt. And it was frustrating at the time. We were living in Perth in a flat and there wasn't a lot of space to be creative. And I had young children as well. And then when we moved to Fife, we lived still in the same cottage and just had more room to work and experiment. And that's when I started to make more felt. And I was kind of doing the textiles and the felt kind of side by side, and they both grew. And then with doing the yarn shows, the felt kind of took over. And I still do the textile jewellery as well, but the felt pictures, the felt jewellery, the felt boxes and all the other things that I make with the felt and the fibres, they kind of took more of a front
yes.
seat.
Yeah. Because tell people about your themes that you have within your work.
It's funny because I never really sat down and thought, right, this is the range I'm going to make. It very much came about on its own. I think I've always loved texture, and I did get an embellisher machine years and years ago. I used to try and stab all sorts of textured yarn onto the felt backgrounds to try and, you know, get all these interesting things going on. And I used to try and do it by hand, and, you know, they would be a bit amateurish and not particularly stable. And then I invested in the needle felt and embellisher machine, which has 5 needle felt and needles
right.
that go up and down really fast. So you're okay. not just limited to using wool fibres. You can use all sorts of
and you
fibers.
Don't stab your own finger Those, either.
Well, that has happened as well.
Oh, is it?
I started to really experiment by mixing sort of layers of fine fabrics with wool as well.
Right.
And then getting all these different textures into my work. But I wasn't sure at that time of subject matter. So I was doing a lot of kind of abstract things, and I always loved seascapes. I mean, I just absolutely love looking at the sea and the sea by night. And so I would do kind of seascapes with moonlit waters and things. And then I living in the cottage where I live, you know, I'm surrounded by Highland cows, we've got sheep up the road, and we holiday in all the rural parts of Scotland and Ireland. And I think that inspiration just must have been in my head, and the little cottage started appearing more and more in my work, and the little sheep. And so the subject matter's often the same, but it's the backgrounds that are different, and the different techniques I've used to create the background felt, that's what keeps it exciting for me.
And I think we'll come back into your product range shortly. But one of the other things, apart from the different types of products that you have, is your colours.
Everybody says that. It's so funny when I do shows, and I don't just do yarn shows. I do the handmade show in Perth. I do Open Studios North Fife. I do a few smaller craft events, and nearly every second person that comes past my stall comments, oh, the colours. So the colours I choose to use in my work obviously resonate with a lot of people. And it's predominantly purple and turquoise, which I know are a lot of people's favourite colours. But combine that with a bit of green, a splash of pink, you know, and they just seem to really resonate with people. They draw people in, and a lot of people say that my work just makes them feel happy. Which is a lovely thing to have achieved, especially without really meaning it.
Well, I was thinking before I came to interview you about what products I've bought from you over the years, and I came up with a mouse mat, coasters, notebooks, cards, a brooch, keepsake box, and Garrett bought me a cushion.
Oh, yeah, the lamb.
So, and I've had everything from, with the lamb, with the Highland cows, the sheep, the cottage, as you say, and sometimes with your different things with flowers, because I noticed on your website that you've done some floristry in the past, and certainly the thistle and daffodils and foxgloves play quite an appearance in your work as
it's
well.
It's funny you bring that up, because actually, I started out as a Saturday girl with my mum, who was a florist, and she helped run a shop in Perth, and I was her Saturday girl. And then I applied for a Saturday job in a flower shop in Aberdeen when I went off to art college, and I was given a job in a gorgeous little flower shop. It was on Union Grove at the time, David's Florist. And he expanded within a year of me working for him. And I worked with him over my summer holidays to help open this beautiful shop. And it was quite high end. And he had a lot of business from the oil industry. And, you know, we got to do some amazing floristry. And he gave me a really, really good training. And that actually stood me in good stead right up until my daughter was born 14 years ago. I worked in various flower shops in various places, including the west of Ireland. And one thing that customers always said and bosses always said was that I just had a good eye for colour when it came to putting flowers together. And it was funny, it was always the purples and pinks. I didn't like working with reds. To this day, I really don't like red roses. Valentine's Day was a nightmare because I couldn't stand red roses. I was always trying to get guys to buy pink ones for their girlfriends, or yellow. They smell so nice. Or a mixture of, like, you know, even orange, pink and yellow together, anything except red. Aww. And it's still funny, I hardly ever use red in my work. You get a red roof.
I can say the red roof.
Red roof occasionally. And and sometimes maybe a little bit of tartan and a brooch or something. But I just don't get on with red. Yeah. It's funny.
And also your clothes as well, because you wear all those colours too, don't you?
I know. Often at craft fairs and stuff, you go around and you look at the stall, and then you look at the person running the stall, and you think, that's definitely the owner of this work, because they look like their colours.
I think that's it. I mean, I love, obviously, my colours, really the lime green is kind of my thing. And I do actually have a lime green dress. I haven't yet worn it to a yarn festival, but maybe I should.
Maybe you suit it. Match up with some purple, you'd be fine.
Yeah. No, it's, but I think that, you know, whenever I've seen your stand, it probably is a bit like my lime green. It, you know, it's always got the sort of that purples, greens, the turquoisey sort of blues and pinks. That's your kind of overall color base, and that's you as it, well with your clothes.
Yeah,
that
and
you're,
it,
you're
and
wearing.
I suppose that it, when I go, when I find a fiber supplier that I like that isn't just your average online retailer, I will automatically pick the colors. Purple, turquoise, blues, sky blues.
Yes.
Any shade of mauve or lilac, shocking pinks and lime greens. And they are the ones that I'm attracted to. Sometimes I have to force myself to buy other colours. Like I need a bit of yellow if I'm going to do a sunset or, you know, and I need a bit of red for my roofs. But when I actually go to my supply here in the workshop to make things, that's the colours that are there and that's the colours that go into my work. And it's amazing how many people, you know, come to my exhibit and enthuse about the colours, and they're all standing head to toe in the colours as well. And I'm like, well, it's obvious we like the same colours. And I think colours, I mean, you get a whole science of colour therapy and everything, and there's definitely a lot to be said for it, and it's something I just don't really think about. It's just the colours I go for and the colours I put together.
Yes.
I mean, I have heard other designers say they purposely restrict their palette,
yes,
to make a cohesive brand and range of products, and I don't really have to do that because all the colours just kind of go together.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, and I think that you know, whether it be the trinket box or a notebook or one of your cushions, there is something there that we know it's your work.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. A lot of people have said to me as well that the colours I choose are the colours of Scotland.
Yes, that was the other thing that I was going to say.
They're the colours that they see in the, yes, landscape. And I think that that is definitely a subconscious thing on my part. I mean, grown up, I've lived in various cottages in the middle of nowhere most of my life, and I say we love to holiday in the wilder places of, you know, the Highlands of Scotland or the West Coast or the Islands or the West of Ireland, which is very similar. And, you know, the colours in the landscape are, you know, the greens and the heathery purples, yes, and pinks. And I mean, just now looking out the window here, we've got the lovely golden shade of the fields with the pink of the rosebay willow herb, and you know, they're just all the colours that are there, and that is the colours that I would naturally put into my work, and they seem to say Scotland,
yes,
without necessarily being tartan.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Can you remember sort of the first things that you made? Because of course you were saying about the felt and what you were doing with your art as well, but also you've got like your resin jewellery. So where did the sort of the first, you know, was it making the felted picture and then the jewellery or something came from that?
It was, I often think, you know, I never sat down and designed anything that I made. It all happened very organically and through the natural creative process that happens when you get to know materials that you're working with,
yeah,
and how they respond to different techniques. And I am self-taught in what I do, but I was making cards actually with little bits of fine foil. I used to collect all the bits of foil ribbon that, you know, when you're making a bow and, or for a bouquet in the flower shop,
yes,
you need to trim the ribbon, and I, yeah, could never bear to throw them out. So I'd keep them all in my pocket. And I had all this shoebox full of all these beautiful little bits of ribbon, and I wanted to find a way of using them. So I started making cards, and there was a gift shop in Dunkeld. I lived in Perth at the time, and the gift shop in Dunkeld, I knew the chap that owned it, and he said, bring them in, and, you know, I'll see if they sell. And he gave me my first break, and he's like, what else are you going to make? So he really encouraged me to experiment and get on with it. And in another shop that took my card, she asked, did I make pictures using the same fabric techniques? So this was like very layers of very fine fabrics and stitch, all quite intricately assembled into pictures. I used to do like wee harbour scenes and things, because these pictures were going over to the East Nuke. And that, so I developed this kind of cards and pictures range using the fine fabrics. But I thought, how can I make that wearable but durable?
Right. Okay.
So I got some books about free machine embroidery, and I used to lay down all these snippets of fabric and machine embroider all over them in sorts of thicknesses of thread and stitch, and then cut them out and make them into pieces to wear.
Right.
But I felt that they just weren't durable enough. They weren't going to last long enough. And I came up with the idea to set them behind resin and started to experiment with that. And the resin actually intensifies the iridescent properties of the fabrics I'm naturally attracted to.
Yes.
And this whole new range of jewellery was born. And it's not the thing I promote the most online because it doesn't photograph as well as the felt. You know, it's really hard to capture the iridescence of the pieces in a photograph. But they're so popular offline.
Yeah.
So my normal craft show range would include the textile jewellery. I don't really take it to yarn shows because I'm invited there for the wool.
Yes.
But there's shops and galleries. There's about 3 or 4 different shops and galleries in Scotland that are selling my textile and resin jewellery. And it's great. It's very, very popular. And people always rave about it. And people say, oh, I bought this for so-and-so and they absolutely love it. Or I get compliments on this all the time. And my mum, she's on the folk circuit, singer, and she would wear my jewellery all the time. Biggest fan.
That's lovely.
And she would wear it on stage and people would always compliment on, your jewellery sparkles as you turn and leave, you know. And it is, I wear it myself, the sparkly jewellery, and people are always commenting on it. And so that is how the textile jewellery came about. And you know, it's a full-time job. I could actually just make that all day.
Yeah.
So I tend to take a week or two and make just that and make enough to last for ages and then go back to my felt making.
Yeah. And give your arms a bit of a rest as well.
That's great because, or if you get bored or tired, there's never nothing to do. There's always something to do.
Yeah.
But I'm hopefully getting... I had pendants and earrings in all sorts of different shapes in the textile jewellery range. And then I was doing bracelets as well, and I didn't do them last year because I just didn't have time. And I ordered the findings to make them this year. So hopefully the bracelets will be back soon.
And you might not be able to tell us, but do you have a favourite? Is that allowed?
A favourite thing to make?
Yes.
It's funny because I go through phases. I did really enjoy making the bracelets, and I said I can remember saying to a fellow maker I could just sit and happily make these and nothing else. But then working from home on your own, it is easy to get fed up.
Yes. So the variety helps.
Yeah, the variety does really help. It's funny, I do really enjoy making my pictures, but they're the thing I make the least time for. Mm. And I think it's because when I do shows and I do them, I sometimes have as many as one a month, I'm just constantly making stock, and that's the little stuff.
Yes.
And then I'll do a mad make of pictures. If I've got like open studios, I have more wall space to exhibit pictures So I will make a lot of pictures in the run up to that.
Because the pictures are beautiful.
Thank you.
Know,
really I do really enjoy them. Yeah. And I actually love when I can make something with felt that's just felted. So like this brooch that I'm wearing just now on my shawl, there's no needle felting or stitch involved with that.
Right.
It's just felting.
Okay.
And it's very satisfying to make something just with your hands.
Yes.
And you know, you're really getting tactile with it, and you're using, you know, almost like sculpting the wool into shape. And, you know, to explain, this is like, you know, just 2 layers of circle layered up with a ball in the middle to make it like a flower. But I also love making my other brooches, which involve blinking iron and layers of fabric and felt and bond a web and interfacing and then they all have to be stitched around and then beads added. And but you can get into a rhythm with a thing.
Yes.
And I get a great sense of satisfaction if I can make a good batch of something.
Yes.
I definitely batch produce. You know, I don't just sit and make one thing. I will make a batch of things.
I'm like that, particularly, say, with earrings or stitch markers. I will sit down and do, as you say, like a batch.
Yeah, and it's a great sense of satisfaction when you've got a good amount made at the end of the day and you think that was a good day's work.
And I suppose also it's probably a bit like me. It's almost like a repetitive process, isn't it? But you get into a rhythm with it that...
And the other thing I do really enjoy, a good bit, needle felting is really bad for your posture and it half kills me to sit and needle felt a lot. Like sometimes I'll do a wholesale order of 20 brooches and that is a lot of needle felting and it's really bad for you because I forget to get up and move about. But basically I just get a really good audio book and I will happily sit and needle felt all day, every day for a week. And then walk about like a decrepit old woman.
You will find Aileen in her cottage with her audiobook on.
So yeah, I do have to make myself go for a walk of an evening just to stretch out a bit.
Yeah. I think we're probably all guilty of that, whether we're making for a business or making for pleasure. We can get so engrossed sometimes in what we're doing and we love it so much that posture thing really can be forgotten, and it's so important. I mean, I know that I've had referred pains in my wrists and elbows before, which has actually come from my neck, and it's been because I've almost tensed myself up because I'm crouched over my knitting or my making or you know so much because I've really got into it and really intense, and it's only afterwards I've gone, oh, that relief in the shoulders, and then realized that trying to bend my arm at the elbow, and it's all actually come from my neck, you know, and I've learnt that now from the physio and what I have to do and thinking about how I sit and taking breaks and all that stuff. Yeah.
A hot bath and a glass of wine really
that helps too.
Helps. In the winter when I'm really at the peak of my making season, I basically live in the bath of an evening and have a glass of wine it really, really helps. And actually every night, whether it's hot weather or not, I sit with a hot water bottle at my lower back.
Okay.
And that helps me manage my aches and pains.
Oh, our poor bodies, what we put them through for our,
I know, for our art,
our craft and making.
And then stand all day at an event.
Yes.
One extreme to the other.
I do actually find that I do struggle from standing all day at the festivals, right in my lower back. I just get a weeny, weeny little spasm. And it's because sometimes I've just stood in one sort of little area for too long and not used to standing.
It's my knees, my knees and my feet that go from the stand. And I'm good at standing all day, but I just think I can't chat to people sitting down. I really like to welcome people to my stall or my booth and talk to people, and I just can't do it sitting down.
Yes.
You know, I will try and sit down at some point in the day, but generally I would stand.
Yes, yeah. And when you've got things like, you know, when you're in the auction marks and you've got the cold concrete floors and they're rubbled and, you know, again, it's just, that surface is quite different. I mean, actually, in some ways, it's probably good because you're almost sort of like just wobbling a little bit on your feet, which helps with your core.
Well, I did a lot of research for going to Woolfest this year and got a lot of good tips. And one of them was to take a rug or something to stand on. So I knew the way I wanted to set my booth up. I wanted it to be open enough that people could come in, especially wheelchair users, but also have a space for me to stand behind a table because I really do like to be out of the way. And I like to be behind a table. And I took, it was an old pink rug it was like a rag rug that used to be in my daughter's bedroom, and it was in the shed and it was absolutely barked. So I washed it and it washed up beautiful. Took it to Woolfest and it was perfect. I just tucked it behind my stall, and because it was so hot, I actually was able to stand my bare feet on my nice clean rug.
Very nice.
It made a huge difference.
Woolfest was so unusually hot for
it was pretty unusual.
Yes, it was. Oh, that's good. I almost felt like I needed a sort of bucket of ice cold water to put my feet in that day.
No, I arrived on setup day wearing jeans. I need to get out of these jeans, I'm going to die. So I had to go and find something else to put on, rake the case.
Yeah, it was way too hot, wasn't it, really? Talking about, we talked at the beginning about Edinburgh Yarn Festival, and that's where we met, and it was our both of our first yarn festivals that we exhibited at. Little did we know that we would kind of keep meeting each other at Edinburgh. So we, I think the following year, we were both in the pop-up market again, and we were next door to each other.
We were neighbours, yeah, that was lovely.
Yeah, that was,
that was so much fun.
Baron's Cafe, wasn't it? Because there was only five pop-up vendors that year. And then the following year, you were in the main marketplace?
We were both in the main market.
No, I wasn't.
Oh, no.
I was.
Oh, yes, I was down the one corner and you were...
I was teaching. I was teaching for the Teapot Trust. So I was over in the little room to the just beyond the cafe on my own with my table. You were in the main marketplace.
That was
you?
My first year in the main marketplace. So that was my first experience of even exhibiting within like a shell scheme booth.
Right, yeah.
And... oh, it was so much fun thinking about, you know, how to set that up and everything. And I had no idea how busy it would be compared. I mean, I thought we were doing well in the pop-up market. Just chalk and cheese. I couldn't believe it. And thankfully, I had a friend. She's a felt maker from the west of Ireland. And she insisted on flying over to help me. So she flew in and arrived on the morning of the first day. And thank goodness she did. She manned one side of the booth because I set it up like I was on a corner.
Right.
And I set it up two-sided and she basically manned one side and I manned the other. And I think at one point we hadn't spoken to each other for about 2.5 hours. It was so busy.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was great. What a buzz.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the following year, so it's 2018. Yeah. Last year. Losing track of time now. So we were both opposite each other.
We were opposite each other. It was lovely.
Yeah,
it was
both on corners.
Yeah.
That was really lovely. But again, I think, just like you were saying, you hadn't spoken to your friend. I think we, apart from in setup and at the end, we hardly spoke to each other.
We see each other over the sea of people.
Yeah.
It is quite a phenomenon, EYF.
Yeah.
And it's nice that we've been at other shows together as well. We've been at Aberdeen Yarn Festival and Perth Festival of Yarn, and that was us both at Woolfest this year. It's so nice to be able to meet lovely people that you've met at one show to then meet them at the next and the next. And the same has happened with Helen from Ripples Crafts.
Yes.
We were neighbours at Aberdeen this year and then we saw them again at Woolfest, and we'll all be at Loch Ness Knit Fest.
Yes.
And that's a really nice thing to happen.
Yeah. And then this year you did the Make Wool event at Edinburgh.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was quite different, wasn't it? With very specific...
Again, didn't know what to expect because it's a different aspect of the festival and I hadn't been at it the year before. I actually thought it was held in the Marquee.
Right.
Didn't realise it was held in the concourse. And I got this fantastic space.
Yes, you did.
And really swithered how to set it up, because you've set it all up in the morning. And 10 o'clock, the doors opened and the visitors came like locusts. And it was just the most crazy 4 hours trading I have ever done in my life. My husband and I, my husband usually drops me off at an event and goes away and has a day out. Maybe if our daughter's with us, they'll go away and do something together and come back for me. I said, I think you're actually going to have to stay and help me in case it gets busy. Well, it was busy from the off and he had never used the card machine, didn't know that it worked in conjunction with the phone, and was completely thrown in at the deep end. And he was so good at it.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, he was brilliant.
I saw him in action.
And he was chatting to everyone, and of course you've got all the different people from all over the world and all the different nationalities, and he loves speaking to people from anywhere and everywhere, and he was so good at it. So at that point I said, right, you really need to work with me. And I'm going to train you up to help me at Woolfest. Because at Woolfest, the difference with that is I had to go shopping.
I know you did.
Like,
and when
I
came to say hello to you, you were
shopping.
I was like,
see you.
And David was running the stand.
And he was so good at it. Yeah. So that was actually a really nice aspect of this year's events, is that I've had his help.
Yes.
And it's been really, really lovely. Yes. And so supportive.
Yeah.
Because quite often I just feel like I'm doing it on my own. Yes. You know?
Yeah. Tell us about your shopping at yarn festivals then, since you've been coming to yarn festivals as an exhibitor.
Yeah, that's been a real eye-opener for me, because, to be honest, I wasn't interested in yarn as a knitting product, because I don't knit, and I just used to find, you know, straight yarn boring. If I wanted to use yarn in my felt work, I was looking for knobbly, thick and thin hand spun or kind of really interesting yarns. I did pick up a few amazing yarns at the Hand Spinner Having Fun years ago.
Yes.
And I've had knitters sucking their teeth at me for chopping them up, you know, because I'd be just like cutting into them, taking bits out to needle felt onto to landscapes and things. And I would always have my materials on display at events like Open Studios, and yarn enthusiasts couldn't believe that I was cutting this stuff up, and I just never thought anything about it. And then the first DYF that I was at, there was quite a few vendors there with fibres. And that was great, being able to get access to really unusual hand-dyed things. Mm. I love using hand-dyed fibres in my work, because you just get such a variation in colour and texture. Because yes. If you use just shop-bought merino all the time, it can all be very flat. And also gives more interest, and the fact that it's you're creating one-off pieces, you can never repeat them if you're using hand-dyed fibres. But also, I think, you know, if I'm depicting, you know, rural scenes in my work, the hand-dyed fibres lend themselves really well to that. And before I started doing yarn shows, I had already discovered Orkney fibres, hand-dyed fibres from Orkney. And it's North Ronaldsay yarn, and it's hand-dyed.
Yes, I know which one you mean.
By Pam Murray. But my mum goes to Orkney Folk Festival every year, and she used to bring me back a little bag of this stuff. I could never bear to use it because it's so special. But it just gave it, because it's hand-dyed from plants that are in the landscape, it lends itself really well to being used in landscape pictures. Yeah. So I was already aware of that, and then at the yarn shows, the more that I went to, the more interesting fibres I was able to get my hands on, and I was also able to meet ones that I can go and visit, like Strathairn Fleece and Fibre over near Creef. She's at UCL, Linda. She has this beautiful cabin, and she spins as well, but she keeps a lot of roving for felt makers. And she knows my colours.
So you're just telling her you're coming over and it's all laid out for you.
But again, also, I mean, I need greys, you know, for using for stones and walls and things. Yes. And I can just get in touch with Linda, and she'll send me, you know, all the kind of greys that she's got. And the rougher the wool, the better for that work. And so, it's great if they know what I'm making.
Yes.
You know, they can recommend the good fibres to use.
Yes. You say you're not a knitter, but you are a crocheter, aren't you?
Well, I am converted now to thin and smooth yarn. I now have full-blown yarn addiction, as well as fibre addiction. At the 2018 EYF, well, just before that, in the January, I had decided I would quite like to try crocheting again. I'd always been able to crochet, but I hadn't done it for years, and I only used to make little things like purses and things, and I'd never followed a pattern in my life. And then you did the collaboration with the crisscross shawl.
Oh, with Faye from the the crochet.
Yes, and I thought that would be a good one to try. So I knew that I couldn't buy yarn online. Woolly yarn online, because I find it really itchy against my neck. So I went for some cotton, and I crocheted this shawl, and I got bored really quickly and made it really small. I just wanted to get to the crisscrossy bits, but then I was like, no, you know, just sit down and make it properly. So I have to admit, I bought some cheapy acrylic just for practicing, and I made it properly, and that was the first pattern I'd ever followed. So when EYF came around, I was ready.
Yes.
And I bought the Acer pattern from the Crochet Project, and some beautiful hand-dyed turquoise yarn from Lindsay Roberts of Blooming Indigo.
Yes.
and I crocheted my first little lacy shawl, and that was me hooked, for want of a better pun. And I think I made 15 shawls, wow, in 2018, different ones,
all kind of pinks and purples, all different, and blues, and I've got turquoises, and
the best one I made as a present for my mum, because I got to the stage where I was like, I really can't justify buying more yarn to make myself another shawl, but if I buy it as a present, that's different. So I bought this beautiful yarn from Woo Sheeps, and it was gradient teal, and I made the monsoon stole for my mum, and it worked out really well. It was stunning. And I then made a gift for my cousin and my auntie, and then went back to crocheting them for myself. And I'm now working on my first garment that's not a shawl. It's a cardigan, and it's really basic stitch, but I've just completed my first sleeve.
Yay!
Which is really exciting. So yeah, I absolutely love crocheting. I can never now not be without something to crochet. And I have invested in some beautiful yarns at the shows that I've been at. Some I can't bear to use yet. Some I've used really quickly because I've been like, oh, I've bought it, I have to use it. And then regretted it because the project wasn't special enough for the yarn.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of frogging going on. But I'm not too bad. I do try and finish the thing I'm working on before I start a new thing. But I've learned so much.
Aww.
And I've learned about yarn weights and different dyeing processes and different yarn bases. And so, yeah, I've educated myself to understand the yarn industry and the community more.
Yes.
And again, I've learned so much just even about understanding patterns and how they work and how it's best just to give it a go.
Yes.
And learn as you go.
Yeah, not to kind of be afraid of it and making mistakes, because you either just plough on through the mistake and leave it, or you rip it back and you learn from it and you try again, and it doesn't actually matter if we make mistakes, you know.
And I love trying new things. I am quite an impatient crocheter. I get bored really easily. So I love using gradient yarn because you've got the excitement of the colour change. Yes. And I love a pattern that changes its stitch every so often.
Yes.
And I think, having done my first garment, I could now go back and look at some of the shawls I've made and tweak them a bit and put sleeves in. So my mind is always working.
That's good.
And I like that about crochet, because you're kind of just working away and I'm constantly thinking.
Yeah.
Like, how could I apply this to here and there? And
I think crochet is almost a little bit more adaptable than knitting in some ways. And maybe some people listening in might disagree with me, but I think crochet is kind of easier to add a bit on here and add a bit on there. And if something goes wrong, it kind of feels easier to carry on and not disguise
it.
Yeah.
A few.
Whereas I think knitting is not quite as forgiving.
To be very accurate. The reason I don't knit is because it just hurts my upper back.
Right.
It just gives me backache, and it's not, it's the same with hand stitching. You have to be careful how much I hand stitch. And I used to get it when I worked in the flower shop making corsages.
Right.
So it's just that action of my hands here.
Yes.
Gives me terrible pain across the top of my back. So that's why I don't knit. And I've tried, you know, somebody still use little circular needles, and I just don't get on with it. So I would like to. And I'm not saying I'm not a knitter.
No.
I might, you know, I can knit.
Yeah.
I just don't. And I haven't really attempted anything fantouche with it either. But I would like to give it a go.
Oh. Maybe we should work on that sometime.
You've still got to teach me to make a dorset button first.
Well, I know that Faye, for one thing, if she is listening into this episode, will be very pleased to hear that she helped set you off on your crochet.
She did indeed. Yeah.
The next time then that we're exhibiting together, which will be Loch Ness Knit Fest, which is in October, I could try and sort out a little Dorset button. session for you.
Well, we'll be staying over, so we could maybe have a Dorset button and wine evening.
Oh, that sounds good.
Or gin.
Or Prosecco. There's a theme running here. And maybe then we should have a look at uniting again, see if you could find a way that works for you without pain.
Yeah, I think having learned so much by just getting on with crochet and learning different things from different patterns and learning as I go, I think I would apply the same to knitting, find something that I would like. Because the thing about crochet, the things that I like to crochet and the things I admire that are crocheted, a lot of the time don't look crocheted. You know, like the Crochet Project design in a very knitterly way. The hat that I made from their Everyday Wearables book looks knitted. And I think the type of crochet I like to do, it's kind of lacy but not prissy.
Right.
And it has a lovely drape. And I think if I could find something that I wanted to knit enough, then I would tackle it. But bear in mind that, you know, I do crochet as a hobby. Everything else all day, every day. I really shouldn't add anything else to my list of things I do.
That is the problem, isn't it? I mean, I've done weaving 2 or 3 times and I really enjoy it, but it's just another thing to go down. And I don't have enough time to knit at the moment as much as I would like. So to add in weaving as well, it's, you know, I would always fundamentally, if I have spare time, want to be knitting, because that's what I enjoy as, you know, the pleasure for myself type of thing. So the weaving, I would love to explore more, but yeah.
I think with any craft, you have to get to know the materials you're working with and how they respond to different techniques, and that takes time.
Yes.
And it's the same with anything. And unless you've got the time to dedicate to that, I think it just leads to frustration. So with knitting, I know that I would have to learn a lot to get the results I wanted. So maybe in time, you know.
Yes.
But at the moment, I'm really enjoying getting on with the crochet. And it is good to try something different. I did a mixed media workshop for fun earlier this year, and it was so liberating because I didn't have to have a finished piece at the end.
No.
It was for selling.
Yes.
And I just had a ball and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I actually found it inspiring for my work.
Yes.
Even though it wasn't a mixed media textiles workshop, it was working with paints and inks and graphite.
Okay.
Graphite of all things, grey, me. But I really enjoyed it. And
grey's a good base colour for lots of other colours.
Well, it did inspire me because I did this kind of stormy scene all in greys, but I then translated it into fibre and did the what was in grey did in purple.
Right.
And it worked really well. Yeah, sold that piece at Open Studio.
Loch Ness Knit Fest, it'll be the first time that you're exhibiting.
Yes,
there.
I did really want to do it last year, but I thought we were going to be on holiday and then we weren't, and I regretted not doing it. So I thought, definitely going to do it this year. It actually lands in our school holidays. I've still got a school-aged daughter, and my husband always takes a week off in the October holidays, so we thought there's nothing to stop us going. It's a bit of a trek, you know. You've always got to work out the expenses of doing these events. But I thought, you know, I have a product that, you know, knitters and yarn enthusiasts like. And I also have a product that kind of speaks of Scotland.
Yes.
And Loch Ness Knit Fest gets a lot of international visitors.
Yes.
And, you know, if they're needing a nice tasteful souvenir,
yes,
then I'm your woman.
And I think as well, what you've created, Aileen, which is why, you know, I sort of reeled off this list of things that I've bought, is because they also, not only are they lovely little keepsakes for yourself, they're lovely to buy for other people as presents.
A lot of people do buy them as gifts. I mean, I probably should say that I do have my artwork printed onto,
yes,
useful items like little tins, notebooks, coasters,
mugs,
mugs I've done in the past. I've phased them out.
Oh, have you? Sorry.
They're just heavy.
Ignore me.
Heavy to carry about and heavy to post. But I always want to change the range. And yes. There's only so much you can fit on a 6 foot table, which yes. is the average size
That's
for
true.
A store.
You go up, don't you?
I know. I'm always going higher and higher.
Towers on her table.
But the other thing is I want to get back to making more original yes. pictures. But I do have a calendar every year and yes. I have a tea towel. So these are nice things. They're lightweight to take yes. home and they're easy to post.
Yes.
And again, they're useful. They're yes. not just useless objects. They're useful yes. items. And a lot of people say they can't bear to use them. I did make them for the purpose of being used. So yeah, I'm always looking for new things to have my artwork applied in print too.
Yes.
And also always trying to, although I've been making the same product range probably for about 4 years, they're never the same. Each one's a one-off. Yes. Like the little brooches and things, they're all one-off pieces. And again, I think it's really important to, a lot of people ask, do I hand dye the fibres that I use in my work myself? And I say no. Hand dyeing is a skill that people have honed over years, and I am really proud to support them in their skill by buying their fibres and using them in my work. And because I buy different fibres from different people at different shows, different wool bases, the fibres come from different shape, you get different effects.
Yes.
So the pictures, the brooches, you know, all the jewellery bits and things, they're always different. You never get two the same. So I'm always trying to develop that, you know, build on the range that I've got, but always make it better.
Yes. Yeah. And I will, I haven't asked Aileen this yet, but hopefully she won't mind. I'll put a couple of pictures that I have of her stand and yeah. work into the show notes.
Yeah,
and
you're welcome to do
a
that.
Link to her Etsy page so that you can see the range of products that Aileen has got on offer at the moment. Aileen, thank you very much. I think we could carry on talking. There's so much to talk about, isn't there?
There is. And, you know, we've both come into the fibre community at the same time and we've grown with it.
Yes.
And, you know, we've watched each other's, you know, business grow and product line grow, and we've watched each other learn so much.
Yeah, definitely.
From the different things that we do, and it's a really nice friendship to have, and you know, we're colleagues, I suppose,
yes.
although we're live so
yeah.
far apart, but it's always nice to meet in person at events and offline.
Definitely. And also both of our husbands have been drawn into the businesses, haven't they? Which I'm sure they never thought they were going to
be. Imagine to be standing about selling woolly things. But yeah, they're both really good at it.
I know.
Yeah. But yeah. It's great to have their support as well.
Definitely.
It
yeah.
really is lovely to have family support.
Yeah.
Keep trying to train my daughter up. She's not up for it yet. My son's good at it, but he's off doing his own thing.
I totally endorse what you've said. It has been really lovely to meet you originally, but each year seeing each other grow and develop and being there to support each other. And mm-hmm. it's so lovely that we can meet like this as well, which we don't always get the opportunity to. So
yeah, it's a great pleasure.
Thank you very much for being part of the show.
Well, thank you very much for featuring me on your lovely podcast. I do really enjoy listening to it.
I know, I often get little messages from you saying you're listening to me as you're working.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't talked much about like where I live or stuff, because I just basically live in the middle of nowhere. But you know, when other podcasts I've listened to, it's such a visual treat. You can kind of really picture where people are, and you know, it's like traveling from your laptop.
yes. Well, to be honest as well, for me now it'd be lovely to know where you are. You mm-hmm. know, I knew that you lived rural, I knew you lived in Fife, but to actually now, having been here, I can picture you now yeah. as you're doing
North,
your work.
North Fife is lovely. It has a charm of its own. It's very agricultural.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, here we are sitting in a wee cottage that was built in 1854, surrounded by trees and fields. And, you know, it's a lovely, lovely place to be. And it's been a real pleasure to be able to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Garant and I had a great time visiting Aileen and her husband, David, and daughter, Kira, at their beautiful cottage in Fife. I always love it when I can visualise people in their space, in their home, working away. It connects us even though we're not together. We meet up at shows And the rest of the time, we're actually quite isolated in our own little environments, getting on, making a way, maybe connecting, chatting through social media every now and again. But as I say, it's lovely when you get that chance to meet in person, away from shows, and to see someone's work area. And then, you know, when I'm back in my own space, I can think about them working in that space too. And that's what I really got from being with Aileen in her wonderful cottage. I'm sure Aileen's products will go down well at Loch Ness Knit Fest. And if you're not visiting the festival or you're listening to this episode after the festival, then the links to Aileen's website, Facebook and Etsy page are in the show notes. After Loch Ness Knit Fest, I will be back with a full episode, catching up with all the loose threads of the other episodes of this year. I will be filling you in on my makings, yarn festivals, events, and telling you a little bit about my plans for the rest of the year. And of course, what might be coming up in 2020 and that all important sky weather. Many thanks for listening in again. In the meantime, you can find the show notes on the website at tjfrog.co.uk. And if you'd like to get in touch by either dropping me a line at tanya@tjfrog.co.uk or via the contact page on the website. Or you can find me on Facebook and Instagram as TJ Frog Sky, Twitter as TJ Frog Makes, and Ravelry as TJ Frog. The music is by Ron Paintant and licensed from Melody Loops and called One Frog for a Prince. Bye for now. Till next time.